And writer Dermot Bulger has set his new play in a Dublin Docklands pub on the brink of closure. The lives of the characters who gather there to mark the death of a loved one are also on the cusp of profound change as well. Dermot Bulger is with me in studio now. The Docklands and the why for all of that is one thing, but I want to talk first of all about the night you have set this play on.
Well, listen, if you think of the 90s are kicked off with Italian 90 and the whole country goes mad. The 80s were kicked off with Johnny Logan and Ireland winning the Eurovision, which we didn't win much in 1980, you know. So it was actually a night that people remember.
Where were you on the night? Do you remember?
I was in a pub, ironically, watching it. So I'd be sitting in a pub for the next 5 weeks watching it as well every night. And of course, it fits in because Johnny Logan sang it so beautifully, but it's also written by Shay Healy, and as someone in the play says, he's a local because he's from Sandymount, and Sandymount just rings end with notions. So he actually the song is throughout the night, and the play is in real time. The Eurovision is going on, and say they watch Johnny Logan, and then they say they turn it back on to watch the English give us 12 pints, and we give them nothing, you know, and all those things that we do every year, you know. So it's actually set on a very, very particular day, which has great effects in the sense of everybody of a certain age can remember where they were, but also it means that, say, Tony Gregory isn't a TD yet, because he's not a TD for some months, and Charlie's family planning bill hasn't happened yet. And so it's actually, when you say something on one night, you are sort of trapped in the time of that thing. You
and
know?
When at the point of starting the writing for this, then, did you have to go back and say, right, and really do your historical research there in terms of placing all of those events, you know, because in lots of ways, turbulent times in Irish society.
Very turbulent times. I suppose this originally arose from Dublin Port commissioned me to write a play for the Abbey on the docks, but they gave me total artistic freedom. And very often you say, well, let's do the 1913 lockout, or let's do when Jim Larkin comes back, or let's do sort of that very, very picturesque time when all the ships tied up along the quay to Customs House, and the dockers were an integral part of the city. And my father was a sailor, and his ship would tie up there, and he'd buy provision because he was a cook, porter, and everything else. And it all happened very much as part of the city. But then gradually, by the time this play happens, the docks have moved. They've moved to Alexandra Basin. They've moved out of sight. And if you can imagine down there before the Easting Toll Bridge was built, like how isolated that actually was. And so I deliberately picked a time that wasn't colourful, that wasn't glamorous, that wasn't picturesque in that local colour. It's about real people's lives. At a time, the Pope has just arrived in Ireland. The actual Charles Haughey is telling us that we are living beyond our means while getting his Chavez shorts.
And we don't know about the shorts yet.
Family planning bill hasn't come in yet, where women could get contraceptives if they actually can find a doctor willing to write a prescription on paper and find a chemist and everything else. And so it's actually about the docks. But it's also, this could be about any port. This could be about Rotterdam, where there was a strike at the same time, or Liverpool, or Cork, or Waterford. It's about communities in Ringsend and Sheriff Street and North Wall and East Wall, where generations of skills of a docker were passed on from generation to generation. And down there, they were called button men. The actual button was like the family farm almost, or the taxi plate. It was passed.
You had to have
the button. And suddenly those skills that had sustained those communities for generations were suddenly rendered redundant by the arrival of the container truck and the roll-on, roll-off cargo. And suddenly these people are knowing that there's, as a community, one way of life is dying out, and they stand on the cusp of great change. There's an old doctor is dying. He's died of lung cancer from all the sort of chemicals he's been breathing in for all the years. The characters are still doctors, but they know the clock is ticking. The clock is ticking throughout this play on that way of life, and it's going to be swept away. And it's hard. I was down the docks the other night, and just there's this modern gleaming skyscraper of Google and Amazon and all these big companies. It's so hard to imagine. I remember the docks back then. And
you mentioned that your father worked, it was the Merchant Navy he worked in.
He worked for the BNI, but he went right back to the extra steam packets, going to Lisbon on those really dangerous wartime voyages when they sailed from Dublin Port. And if you were hit by the Luftwaffe, the Pangrove Morphys or all those companies stopped your wages from the minute you hit into water, because you render yourself unemployed by jumping overboard. And so that comes into it, the Nostrand bombing comes into it. I wanted to tell a lot of history about that area. And also,
and was your father, did he tell you a lot of those stories? Would he have passed those on?
No, there's two types of people. There's people like Donald Trump who've never done anything, who talk an awful lot. And there's people like my father's generation who saw and did an awful lot of things and didn't talk about them. Because, as I say, he saw friends die. He had shipping mates in Wexford sort of were killed by the Luftwaffe. He actually was attacked three or four times himself on ship. So at the end of his life, I persuaded him to accept a Medal for Valor from the Irish government. And he was really annoyed. He said, I was doing smuggling as well, because all these men had to make a living. Yeah. And even the docks was a certain amount of bunkering out, as it was called. It was almost like part of the job in a small scale.
So would you have seen, when he was working and the B&I ship, was it the ship that came up in there as well as the ship?
My memory of my father, is really of a registered letter with crisp English banknotes arriving to my mother every Friday, sent from whatever port he'd sent his wages from, So he was present by his absence in my childhood. And then I would walk, I lived in Finglas Park in Finglas, and I'd walk to the corner of Clune Road with my father, and he'd have his little bag and he'd be disappearing off on a voyage, and he would disappear into the gates of the Alexandra Basin and into that sort of wall of the docks. And it was a wall I didn't know. So this place imaginatively allowed me to follow his footsteps into the gate. No, he wasn't a docker. But the dockers and the sailors drank, and there's a whole world I didn't really know. And so it was a great way. Bizarrely, it was the play was actually written in a 15th century Renaissance castle in the middle of Italy. So it was in a very odd place to reimagine.
That's where I happened to be writing
for some reason for a month last year in a long story. But every day you were closing the curtains. Imagining the Dublin docks in 1980.
You couldn't let the sun stream in.
No, it'd be all wrong. No.
And I suppose it's not surprising then that this pub in which it's the night of an old docker has just been buried. Post the funeral. It's not surprising that given the way of life is changing, it's all falling apart, and economically things are certainly not in a good place in 1980. It's not surprising that the pub itself is under stress and strain.
Yeah, and as I was saying, I remember Dublin at that time. It looked like the Luftwaffe had bombed it to pieces, except it didn't. It was like a city falling down in slow motion. And you walked not only along the quays from the docks, but also if you walked towards Euston Station, there were whole stretches of the quays that were just derelict. And there was a whole way of life. And the point depot itself was just empty. Crosby hadn't developed it yet. There were beautiful buildings. Stack C was demolished, and the gasometer was demolished, and all the infrastructure that was beautiful Victorian architecture was all being demolished, and sometimes legally, sometimes illegally. It was like a ghost town. And in fact, there was a feel of a ghost because the bin trucks were coming along and they were dumping their rubbish and they were spreading silt. So they were building, the port was building away from the city. And now, one of the nice things about this commission with Dublin Port is I think that in recent years, Dublin Port has tried to reach back into the city. And I think this is just one of many ways it's doing that. And that's quite interesting. And they have amazing plans down there to redevelop the whole area and open it up to the public. But it was a hidden world. And in every city, there are those docklands that are hidden worlds.
And given that the 80s then was this time of change, does that make it a really good time to write about in terms of dramatic structure? Sure.
It was a great time to be alive because I was 20, and being 20 is just a great time to be alive. But it's also a time of huge change in Ireland and huge conflict in Ireland. You actually have massive unemployment. You have huge industrial unrest. There's a strike, not actually the time of the play, but in the months before the play, the port is closed down for 8 weeks, and they can't get medical supplies out, and the factories are in short time because they can't get supplies out. So there's industrial, but the strikes everywhere. There's actually high unemployment. There's PAYE marches in town. There's also, but also there's the first generation to get free second level education, in which I would include myself, were making their voices heard. And I remember like going in and in Dublin starting, which was really Radical Magazine at the time, and Hot Press starting, and pirate radio stations being there. And so you actually had these sort of, for a young person, you had this almost schizophrenic life. There was the rules of the country as written in the Irish Constitution, and then there was the life you led, which had no connection. And almost every second thing you did was illegal. Even like my only time to ever set foot in Trinity College, I think, was to, in more in hope than success, to buy condoms from the vending machine outside the students' union office, which had this little telltale graffiti, "This chewing gum tastes like rubber," and it was sort of and that was my sole experience of third level education, actually. But it was a very and it wasn't really a successful attempt at third level education. But you had this.
Maybe you got an education of a different kind.
Yeah, an education of a different kind, making melding odds. But it was that was, so you actually have this great conflict between one way of life changing. And it isn't just the religious attitudes, because the Pope has just arrived and that's the last hurrah for Catholicism in some ways, and then those referendums are going to start in the 80s. So, but also the physical thing, there is the actuality is that the port, the old stevedores and all those things, that whole way of life is changing, because simply technology has moved on. And it isn't necessarily like the miners in Britain when Margaret Thatcher closed down mines that were viable.
No, it wasn't like that.
This wasn't sort of, this was just, thing was moving on.
Technology was getting rid of jobs.
And the remaining doctors that were there were holding out for what they could, but they always knew they were the last generation and that world was going to change.
We're with two families, the Dempseys and the Gannons, and again, you've intermarried the two families. Yeah. So it is giving us the real sense of community, because everybody's cousin, and you can't say anything to this person because they're married to that fella's sister. Yeah. It's a very closely knit group.
It is, and there's a tall family. There's a guy called Macca who was put into Dangan at a very, very early age.
Explain Dangan now, because I was going to come to Macca later, but Dangan
was an industrial school, a very, very tough one. I mean, and very good people coming out of Dangan, like Patrick Galvin, that great Cork poet and novelist, members who wrote song for a poor boy and song for a raggy boy, and so, but also a lot of, when heroin began to, and heroin hasn't quite come into Dublin at this time, it's sort of starting to filter its way in, but an awful lot of those people involved in that sort of trade had met in Dangan as kids. Bad things happened in Dangan, they didn't talk about those things, but it made them very, very close, and sort of, you know, so an awful lot of what became criminal networks beginning to bring drugs in, where so and drugs aren't a part of the play, but that sort of wall, that grey cloud of heroin has gone to come in, sweep away. And some, I think what made heroin so quickly invade parts of Dublin in the 80s was this economic vacuum, that one way of life had been swept away, and that the government made very little provision for bringing new industries in. And one of the big things in the play is that there's Lisa Lam, who plays Cathy. She's had to leave school at 15 to work in the Castle Forbes soap factory, and she wants, her desperate ambition is to get back to education.
And to get her daughter educated as well.
To get her daughter, but also get herself educated, and people calling, the daughter would be a latchkey child. But there were so few places for women to go. Now that there's, every university has mature students, but it wasn't in those days. And so it's about like those women being said, I want education for my daughter, I want education for myself, and I want to have a better way of life, and you know, maybe I'll train to be a secretary, because Dublin will need secretaries longer than it will need dockers. And so it is a play, it's not a male, very male play, it's a very female play as well.
And the mention of Lisa Lam, most people will know that there's probably going to be singing in it as a result. Did you decide the singing was going to be there yourself, or how did that come along?
It came along, I wrote the play, and then they actually handcuffed me and they put me in a little basement of the Abbey, and they picked all the songs and then they let me out. Basically that's how it worked. But there were
it's Graeme McLaren who's directing here.
Yeah, and done a fabulous job, and really it's been Graeme's vision to have this play since he came to Dublin first, and it's one of, I think so far, six new plays in the Abbey this year, and there's a lot of new work coming over, and this is something that has been very close to his heart.
Yeah, because this is something, I know you'll be aware of this, a lot of people have been talking about the lack of new writing, in fact, in the Abbey since the arrival of Graham McLaren and Neil Murray as the artistic directors, and that, you know, this idea that the Abbey needs to encourage new writing and protect the canon. Do you think we're in safe hands with Graham McLaren and Neil Murray?
Yes, I do, because I think that when a new artistic director comes in, and there's two of them, so it takes around 2 years for them to develop an actual body of work, and this year you see that body of work, and I've seen all kinds of interesting plays in the Abbey and in the Peacock, and youth groups and other people coming in. So the place is a hive, and even in this play, we're going to have, it hasn't been properly announced yet, but we're going to have like lock-ins at the dockside on certain nights, because it's in a bar. There'll be music after the show as well, you know, and you just have the place vibrant and alive. And
so this will be in the Abbey itself
when the show
finishes?
Only once or twice, by surprise, I guess. Nice. And I think that for my father's generation, they very often didn't talk about things, only among themselves, and because they were battered if they talked when they were kids in school and everything else. And so singing gave them a way to express emotions and express sort of feelings and love and everything else. And so songs, but the songs I haven't written for the show. The songs are songs, you know. The songs are like the Rocky Road to Dublin and sort of A Small Cafe Out of the Way, and sort of and George Murphy, that wonderful singer, plays the barman and has to be dragged from behind the bar to sing on various times. And
what you're describing there, the canon of Irish music is going to be well represented.
Well,
on this.
I just want to go back to
that thing I was asking. Yeah. You're saying that, yes, you feel there's good work has been happening in the Abbey in recent times. And what about the canon? Do you think, you know, people are asking, where are the Freels? Of course, when the Freels are happening, they're saying, why is there another Freel happening? Or why is there another occasion? But when they're not there, as they don't seem to have been recently, people are missing. Do you think that will be served well by both Neil and Graham?
I think there are good plays being produced by good playwrights. I think Edna O'Brien's Country Girls was really, really good. I think there have been lots of new good plays that have come in. I think the problem with the canon and what is remembered is that you have to wait 25 years to figure out what is remembered. And so I think that history always filters away and sifts away. I can't speak for my own work, whether it's a good player or bad player. Yeah. That isn't my job to say. But I think that there's a lot of opportunities for writers and actors in there at this moment in time. And it's starting, you can see the vision starting to unfold. And I just find it exciting. I find the gate as well to be very, very exciting. And really, that you have these there's reasons to go to the theatre in Dublin, which is nice.
And you're at what point are you at? Have you've been in the rehearsal room, I presume,
I was writing a speech last night. I've been writing. Picasso was once asked, when was a painting finished? And he said, when the gentleman from the gallery comes to hang it, and a play is only finished when the gentlemen and ladies from the press come to hang the playwright. So this play will be finished on the 26th of September when it opens. But one of the great things that the Abbey brought in free previews. And on next Monday, the 23rd, anybody can go. There's 450 free seats. Just turn up.
Yeah, right. those free previews are very, very...
They're brilliant. Loads of people, loads of students who can't afford, loads of people unemployed. Just come and please, that's the audience.
So you queue
really
and then they give the give you out queue, the tickets later on.
And
I have heard people saying even when they don't get a ticket, they've enjoyed the experience of being there.
It reminds me of that Sunday in Wimbledon when it was a rainy day. There's supposed to be a rest Sunday and the public can just come in if it rains, and there's always a great sense of vibrancy, and there's no atmosphere in the theatre like that sort of free preview. Loads of people coming in.
And that's this Monday, by the way. There's a text that came in while you were speaking there. It was a young postman working out of Sheriff Street and delivered to the Docklands in 1974 and 1975. He was there for that period. It's exactly the way Dermot describes it. It was almost Dickensian. The Liverpool Bar, an early house, was a vibrant place at 7:30 in the morning.
Because the dockers would go to find where work was, so all those early houses, and this is one of those early houses, but unfortunately as work is gone, the early house is closing. But it doesn't, the Dockside Bar doesn't actually close for business until the 26th of October, so you can still get a few drinks down there for the next few weeks.
John Cobb was the gentleman who sent us in that text.
Thanks, John.
So just to give the dates then again, last orders at the Dockside is what Dermot Bolger has been speaking to us about. It opens at the Abbey Theatre, free preview next Monday, then there are paid previews on Tuesday and Wednesday, with the official opening on Thursday, September the 26th, as part of the Dublin Theatre Festival. And you can find out full information on dublintheatrefestival.ie.